Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. Coming up tonight, Sinn Féin in government.
We will contest the next general election to be in government. The people will decide when that's going to be.
Sinn Féin economics. What would they do?
We stopped the water charges. We ring-fenced funding for healthcare. We invested in education.
Analysing Sinn Féin economics, North and South. Our late debate tonight after the news from Una O'Hagan.
Good evening. The Jobs, Enterprise and Innovation Minister has said that if the proposed restructuring of Bosch and Lomb in Waterford City is successful, the company will be in a position to invest in the future of the plant. The eye care manufacturer announced today that it's seeking 200 job losses and pay cuts of 20% among the remaining staff. If that can't be achieved, the plant may be forced to close. Minister Richard Bruton said the government was ready to support the firm's investment plans.
There's no doubt this is an exceptionally difficult day for the workers and their families. This company has been recently acquired. They've done a cost re-examination and they have indicated that, the costs are out of line and that there has to be a restructuring. However, in the event that restructuring is completed and agreed, they are in a position to invest, and we stand ready as a government to support that investment so that we can seek to secure the 900 jobs.
The controversial review of discretionary medical cards is to be suspended. The government confirmed today that the HSE would develop a new system where cards could be allocated based on medical need. Independent TD Finian McGrath says establishing grounds of medical need must be a priority.
Sick and disabled children should never have been targeted in the first place, but I do welcome the climb down by the government, because we need to focus on providing the medical services for children, sick children and disabled children, that put medical need as the top priority.
The Minister of State, Alex White, is to confirm tomorrow that he will challenge Joan Burton for the leadership of the Labour Party. Three candidates have so far declared their intention to run for the position of deputy leader. The Republic of Ireland soccer manager Martin O'Neill has confirmed that Roy Keane has had informal talks with Celtic about becoming the club's new manager. Speaking at a news conference in Dublin this evening, Martin O'Neill said Roy Keane had spoken with Celtic director and majority shareholder Dermot Desmond about the vacant managerial post at Parkhead. And the weather forecast, a few clear spells but generally misty and mostly cloudy overnight. Some scattered patches of mist and drizzle can be expected, but most places will stay dry. Lowest temperatures 7 to 10 degrees. Friday will be mostly dry and cloudy, but some sunny spells will develop. Highest temperatures 16 to 19 degrees. That's all for now. There'll be news again at 11.
Una, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. The consensus is Sinn Féin had a great election. 157 council seats in the Republic, 15.2% of the vote. And in the North, 105 seats or 24.1% of the vote. They also have four MEPs on the island. Their performance has raised the prospect of them being in a coalition government in the Republic for the first time, possibly even as soon as after the next general election. They're already in government in the North with three ministries: Education, Agriculture, Arts and Culture. So tonight on the programme, we're going to focus on the party's economic policies and assess if they're compatible with any of the other political parties here with whom they may have to share government. We'll also assess the decisions they've made whilst in power in the North. So with me in studio tonight, Sinn Féin Councillor Eoin Óibrín, who is also the party's economic advisor. Jill Kirby is personal finance journalist. Tony Foley, head of finance and economics at DCU. And from the BBC studio in Derry, we're joined by accountant and political watcher Gerry Murray. You're all very welcome. But first, a correction. It was said on this programme last night that some of Garda whistleblower Maurice McCabe's allegations were embellished. This programme accepts that that is not the case. So to our main discussion tonight, Sinn Féin's economic policies. Eoin, I'll start with you. Just explain, first of all, what motivates your policy.
OK, and I suppose one of the things that often gets lost in debates about the economy is economics isn't some neutral objective science. You really need to start with the kind of society that you want to build, and then when you've made those decisions, identify what you think are the best tools to get there. So from Sinn Féin's point of view, I suppose a key driving factor of our approach to economic policy is equality. We live in a deeply unequal and increasingly unequal society in terms of social and economic distribution of resources, in terms of life opportunities. for children and families right across the country. So when we're looking at the economy, the first thing is how can we create a fairer and more equal economy? Obviously, as Irish Republicans, we'd like to see greater economic integration north and south. So there's also that very strong impulse in our budgetary documents in terms of how can we utilise the value of All Ireland economic integration for the benefit of all people, irrespective of their view of political integration, north or south. And then I suppose when we look at the economic crisis and the types of policies that both created the crisis and that are being used by the consensus parties to get us out, we have a very strong critique of that. We feel that the wrong kinds of policies. And therefore, you know, in the short to medium term crisis resolution, we have a set of alternatives. So really, it's about the All-Ireland economic agenda, a more equal society and one that's able to combine greater economic prosperity without losing sight of the need for social justice and also kind of environmental sustainability.
So would you outline the main points of it? For you, what is the centrepiece of it?
So in some senses, there are kind of four key pillars, and that's both in general, but also in terms of the approach to the crisis. The first two, I suppose, are about investment in jobs and tackling and reducing the debt, particularly that kind of 30% of the state's debt here, which is banking related, the 64 billion. So in terms of jobs, I mean, we've seen, for example, the government making great play of their jobs figures. But in reality, we've had virtually no job growth for the first 2 years of this government. We had some job growth, and of course, any extra job is welcome. But that even has seemed to have fallen off in the latest figures from the CSO this week. And the simple reason is this: when you have a recession, one of the driving factors of the recession is the lack of investment. The private sector pulls out of investing new capital in the economy. And our argument, and I suppose the strong differential between us and the other parties, is we've been arguing from the very start of the crisis the need for a major investment in job creation. Last year, we published a 64-page jobs plan outlining a 4 to 5 year investment programme of 13 billion. We identified the sources of money and identified a wide range of projects in the public and private sector to get people back to work. So jobs is one key element, major stimulus, not the anemic stimulus that the government has been talking about. We also need to tackle the debt. Debt to GDP ratio is 120% plus. 30% of that, as I said, is related directly to the banking debt. 30 billion from the promissory notes, 30 billion from the legacy debt. Now, we need to have a deal on that. And again, one of the problems of the Fine Gael Labour government was for 2 years, they kept saying every time Michael Noonan and Enda Kenny went to Brussels, we will pay the debt in full. They were going to negotiate about the period of time over which they'd pay it, the interest rates, but they kept saying we would pay it in full. Sinn Féin's position, again, a big differential between us and the other consensus parties, to say, no, that's not acceptable. We need to secure a deal on reducing that debt. Doesn't solve the debt problem. We still have, you know, the other 70% of the debt to deal with. Mm-hmm. But getting a significant deal on that would be huge.
OK, so they're, jobs, they're reducing the debt.
Two key pillars. Uh-huh. The other two then key pillars are tax reform and a fairer tax regime and investment in social infrastructure. And in terms of tax, I mean, we have an unusual tax system when you compare us to many of our EU counterparts. So on the one hand, the burden of taxation, particularly on low and middle income families, and particularly through indirect taxes and service charges, is quite high by European comparisons. And at the same time, there are many things that we don't tax that many other EU member states tax. As a result of that, our tax take in the South as a percentage of GDP continues to be among the lowest in the EU 27. It's currently around 29%. The government wants to move it up to about 30, 31% and then drop down by 2019 to 30%. The EU average is 35%, which according to the OECD still constitutes a low tax economy. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is we believe there is scope in a very modest way to increase the overall tax take, but in doing so, redistribute the burden away from lower and average income families and onto other areas, particularly through the likes of a wealth tax and a third band of income tax.
At 48%?
Absolutely. Okay. Which is, if you think about it, is asking somebody earning over 100,000 euros a year to pay an extra 7 cents on every euro they own earn over 100 euros. The value of that is not only is it fairer, but that's money that's less likely to be spent in the real economy rather than taking that off low and middle income families.
So that would be on individual incomes of 100
That's
grand?
Absolutely.
Not a combined
no,
salary?
No, absolutely okay. not. Individual incomes. And then the third is our social infrastructure. Mm. Again, one of the things that makes us different, particularly from our EU 15 counterparts, is the state over the long term, over 30, 40 years, has failed to invest in adequate education, adequate healthcare, adequate childcare. And as a consequence, you can live in one part of Dublin and you can have some of the highest quality of education available in Europe. And you can go a few miles to another place and you could have literacy levels among, or illiteracy levels among 15-year-olds in schools of 50 to 60%. So again, there's a need to look at our investment, and our investment in health, education and public services generally is consistently below the EU average. So we're not looking to tax the bottom out of the economy. We're not looking to borrow huge amounts of money and spend recklessly. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is serious and fair tax reform and serious long-term investment in improving social infrastructure, particularly health and education, things which benefit society as a whole.
And was this plan on, was it costed by the Department of Finance, or did you use the figures provided by the Department of Finance?
So when we produce the alternative budgets each year, there are two mechanisms for political parties to try and cost that. The first thing is you can use the parliamentary question system. So you, Piers Doherty, can put in a parliamentary question and say, to ask the Minister for Finance, you know, how much revenue will be raised by creating a third band of income tax at 48%? And they'll give you back a figure. So traditionally, that's the way we would have costed our budgets. But there is another facility where the Department of Finance will take a whole budget proposal and they will also do a costing of that. And in the alternative budget that we launched last year for this year, we use both of those mechanisms. The one bit of the budget which the Department of Finance refuses to cost is the wealth tax proposal. And the reason for that is because up until this year, the CSO hasn't collated data on the distribution of wealth per household by decile. That's actually a requirement under the Troika Agreement, one of the few bits of that agreement that I actually like. And the CSO is currently collating that data. So we'd be quite hopeful that even that bit of the alternative budget will be in a position to be fully costed, if not this year, by the Department of Finance next year. But there are other ways of costing those things. They are estimates. Mm-hmm. And again, keep in mind, it's not like the Department of Finance is the purveyor of all wisdom on things financial. Just because it says the costing is this doesn't mean that that's necessarily accurate either. At the same time, if you're going to produce an alternative budget, the very minimum you can do is put that through PQs and through the budgetary calculation service of the department for costing.
Okay.
And we have done that consistently.
Okay. Well, you've outlined the four pillars, so we'll, I suppose, get into the meat of it now with our other guests as well. Tony Foley, we'll focus for the start, at least, on the tax reform and the social infrastructure. The tax reform, Tony, does all of that sound, and you've read, obviously, Sinn Féin's pre-budget submission. Is it feasible?
Oh, it's absolutely feasible. The issue is whether it would have the desired consequences or it might have unforeseen negative consequences. And in many respects, there's not that dramatic difference between lots of Sinn Féin's economic policy and the government's policy. So say, for example, in the Sinn Féin alternative budget, they proposed capital gains tax going up, capital acquisitions tax going up, dirt going up. In fact, the government increased dirt by more than even Sinn Féin was proposing. There have been various measures along the expenditure reduction, which they would both have in common. And the big one, the favourite one, of course, the annual one is savings on medicines and generic drugs and so on. So, for example, Sinn Féin's budget had $1 billion of an expenditure reduction. And a large part of that would have been coming from improved efficiency in the health service, medicines. Those two elements together would have been over 500 million of the expenditure. And should the government, they have the medicines in every year kind of thing, it's realising those gains are the problem. So there isn't that dramatic difference. The big headline difference is really, as Owen has mentioned, the wealth tax and the 48%. When he says 48%, though, the marginal tax rate is not 48%. Remember, it's 48% income tax. If you're self-employed, there's another 10% universal charge. Or if you're not self-employed, it's 7%. On top of that, you have the PSRI charge. So you're looking at closer to 55 to 60% as the marginal tax rate. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that and there's nothing to stop doing it. And other countries in the world have it. And if you look at Sweden, it's got very high taxes and its economy performs well. We tend to look at the United States and Britain, which has lower taxes to promote enterprise. So the big discussion element, and it's an important discussion, is whether those tax things, plus the wealth tax proposal, which, as he says, is rightly not actually included as a costed figure in the budget because the department haven't given a costed figure for that. The estimates range anything from 400 million to 800 million. The issue is whether that ultimately causes a flight of rich people from the economy and so on.
Has it done in Sweden?
No, sorry, wealth tax would be more France and Norway. Okay. But now a lot of people would argue, a lot of people, obviously the people who pay the wealth tax wouldn't think it was a great idea in France. There's arguments about the efficiency of a system, how do you measure things, why should some assets be in and not in. So say, for example, the Sinn Féin proposal excludes business assets as a measure of your wealth. On the other hand, if you have five houses as your pension, it'll come in as wealth. So why should you pay 1% on the value of the houses, not if you put it into business assets, as it were? So there's all those kinds of things. There's the problems of valuation, and then there's the problems of paying it, that if you have lots of wealth in paintings, well, it doesn't generate an income. It appreciates capital-wise, so you have to sell them to, as it were, do it. Now, a 1% rate isn't huge, so it wouldn't be as dramatic as if it was a 10% or something, and then people have to sell off vast amounts of their capital. But the main concern I'd have with the tax one is that all we really know about, and it's not just Sinn Féin, it would be the other government parties as well, all we really know is what they do at each budget. We don't really know their vision of tax for the future. So say, for example, in the Sinn Féin case, is the 48% income tax coming to the 55% income tax, taking everything together, is that the maximum they would see forever, as it were? If there was a problem in two budgets down the road and we had problems in expenditure, is it limited to that? Owen mentioned the OECD or the EU average 35% of GDP as tax. Well, what would Sinn Féin's objective be? Would it be 34, 33, 40% and so on? Because, of course, the worry with any taxes, and Sinn Féin is no different to any other political party, is that once it's in, it only goes one way. Mm-hmm. It starts increasing 1%, 1.5%, 2% and so on. Because the desire for public services is infinite. Mm-hmm. There's never a satisfied level of public expenditure.
Okay. Owen, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with anything that Tony has said. And I think, again, it goes back to the point I made at the start, is that what we do every year is we have a budget debate in the Dáil, and it is about individual figures. And what we don't seem to do as a society is to ask the broader question, which is, what are we trying to do here in the broader sense? So, for example, people do want good quality healthcare and they do want good quality education, but also intuitively people would like to pay less tax. And that's obvious because that gives them more money in their pocket. Yet the irony, of course, is if you look at our healthcare system, and this is a case in point, we actually spend more per capita on healthcare when you add in the public and the private and the health insurance contributions than many of our European counterparts. And one of the reasons is because we have such a fragmented delivery of health between public, voluntary and private, it actually makes it more expensive. So that if you were investing in a better quality health system, for example, through greater levels of overall taxation, and not necessarily income taxation, by the way, you could actually reduce people's reliance on private health insurance, those that can still afford it, which could be another way of putting more money in people's pockets. Likewise, for example, I mean, again, in each of our budgets, one of the things we're trying to do is say, OK, how can we redistribute the tax burden in a more fair way, but also in a way that's good for the economy? So in an ideal world, you wouldn't increase taxes for anybody, and that would be the ideal scenario. The problem is if we want to continue to provide basic levels of public services and reduce the deficit, then there has to be some additional level of taxation. If you tax people, particularly lower and middle income families, and particularly through regressive forms of taxation, such as increases in VAT or relatively flat taxes like the property tax or water charges, that not only hurts hard-pressed families struggling under the weight of significant household debt, it also damages mm-hmm. the domestic economy. And we've seen in the last quarter 5,000 jobs lost from retail. Why? Because people are already calculating into how they're spending the fact that they're not going to have as much money because of the water charges.
Okay.
So often it's these things are the choices you make. Do you put the tax burden in a way that's hard for families and bad for retail and the domestic economy? Or do you ask people who earn individually over 100,000 euros a year to pay an extra 7 cents on every euro they earn? For me, there's no real choice in that question.
OK, Jill Kirby, what's your view?
I think it really comes down to the perception that people already have of the tax that they pay. And the feeling, I think, amongst a lot of people is that we have a progressive tax system here which burdens people on pretty low incomes with already pretty high rates. And if you earn over 32,800 euros, you're already moving into the 41% tax rate on every other euro that you earn, plus 7% USC, plus 4% PRSI, so that you're already on a 52% marginal rate for every extra euro that you earn. And you know, the fact that we go in so low is something that I think people are really beginning to be very conscious of, because in the UK, of course, where there already are three different tax rates, the highest rate of tax, which is 45% now, you only enter at 184,000 euros. Mm-hmm. You know, Owen is now talking, Sinn Féin are now talking about an income tax rate for people earning only 100,000 euros. That would be 61% if they increase the 7% additional amount.
So, is it known how many individuals in the state earn 100 grand?
I'm sure somebody knows. It's not as many as I think people think.
Mm. Do you know, Owen?
The information is there, and I remember seeing it in a parliamentary question in terms of PAYE workers about a year ago. I just can't recall the figure offhand.
Whatever
but
it
it's,
is,
quite
mean,
small.
It's quite small.
It's quite small. So it's not exactly, I mean, you know, even about a year ago or so, Minister Noonan was August 2013. He was saying that, you know, he was talking about a 47% top rate. It's actually 48%. Would bring in, he estimated, about 312 million extra. That's the higher rate over for people over 100,000. Well, at 48%, I worked it out, it's about 360 million extra. But I've said it before, I think 100,000 euros for somebody who's only earning the average industrial wage of 35 or so sounds like a great deal of money. But it's not an amount that is fluid it's a fluid sort of point that you reach that. Not everybody is ever going to reach that amount, but the people who do have often gone through those stages of their lives where they were at the average industrial wage, and then they move above that, and then by the time they're in their 50s or 60s, you know, and they've reached the pinnacle of their profession or whatever, well, they're making 100, 150,000. But they've also accumulated debt, and they've accumulated responsibilities, and, you know, trying to educate children, and they've moved up. And so their houses are perhaps more heavily mortgaged. In many cases, even younger people who are doing that are paying a second mortgage in the form of creche fees.
So your point is it's not necessarily...
No, I think we're already paying a fairly progressive amount of tax. But on top of that, though, you know, Sinn Féin is suggesting that there'd be an extra 5% PRSI on incomes that is paid by employers. And they'd bring in about 119 million on that. But that's a pretty big burden. I worked out, you know, for somebody who's has an employee, you know, a very able sales assistant, or not assistant, a sales person, or somebody, a young doctor, well, it's an additional 7,875 euros over that 100,000 that they would have to pay. And they're already paying PRSI of 10,750. So the total amount for that employer is over 18,000 mm-hmm. that they would be paying in that additional PRSI. But, you know, you move on to other things. And what I was thinking as I was going through the list is that the capital wealth taxes, it's very controversial about inheritance tax. Should people be able to leave their life savings, the value of their homes, which of course they've paid for with taxed income, to their families? In this country, I've noticed it's a big issue. Everywhere I go, when you talk about the inheritance tax changes, people are quite offended by it because it's dropped really considerably. Parents used to be able to leave their children over 550,000 euros up to only about 5 or 6 years ago. Now, that's each individual child. You'd have to be very wealthy before a capital acquisition tax was triggered by mm-hmm. that. But nevertheless, property was very valuable then, and pretty ordinary properties would push you over if you also had a pension fund and a lifetime savings. It's been halved now, and the tax has gone from 20% to 33%, and Sinn Féin's suggesting that it go to 43%, and that tax-free threshold drop to just 178,000 euros. Well, a lot of people would really, 187,000. And a lot of people would very quickly get caught in a fairly significant amount of tax that would have to be paid if that happened. And
okay,
these are not wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I did want to mention, though, which I think is really quite significant, is the amount of tax that they're talking about for pension funds. Pension fund relief is currently 41%, and that's all. You don't get any USC or PRSI relief on that anymore. So if you are contributing to a pension, and we all know how serious that issue is, and the fact that nobody practically in this country is contributing significant amounts into their pension funds, You do get 41% tax relief, and we know how quickly that can kick in at over 32,800 income. But they're suggesting that it drop to the standard rate of 20% only. And on top of that, of course, everybody in this country pays the pension levy, which is 0.75% this year. It doesn't matter whether you have 10,000 euros in your pension fund or if you have 200,000 in your pension fund. Everybody pays that 0.75%. And that is a significant amount of money that both is literally taken out of your savings every year and goes to the government, but which also, of course, is not going to be there to grow over 10, 15, 20 years and compound and grow, so okay. that you're at a complete disadvantage. Oh. And Sinn Féin is, you know, not going to help people out in even doing something as simple as trying to fund a decent retirement for themselves.
Okay, so a lot there, Owen. And,
just on the pension one before you answer, Tony. Owen. It's also Sinn Féin's proposal to constrain the level of salary that you could apply pension relief to 70,000. Mm-hmm. So it breaches the 100,000 view, as it were.
Sure. I'll say, Tony, I'm not so sure I'm against that idea. I really don't think that, you know, the taxpayers who are, you know, providing that tax relief to everybody to whom it's available should really be subsidizing more than a 70,000 euro pension. Mm-hmm. I think a 70,000 euro pension is a huge pension by Irish standards. Most people, if they're lucky, are retiring with a pension of about, you know, 3,500 a year.
On the same arithmetic, a salary of 100,000 is enormous.
Yeah, well,
which you said it isn't.
No, it's not for a working person with children to educate and mortgages to pay. Once
what about a single person?
Hang on, once you're retired, you should be able to live on a 70,000 officially funded pension, I think. Otherwise, you know, continue to fund in other ways. But I do think reducing the tax relief is a bad idea, because it's only going to discourage people from saving for the retirement.
We've lots of texts coming in. I'll read some of them. But Owen, you respond to some of what Jill
said
there.
Sure. And actually, before I do that, it's really refreshing to be able to sensibly debate the details of these things. Like, Jill and I agree on some things and disagree on others. Sure. But by and large, when Sinn Féin starts talking about these things, people just start kind of trotting out all sorts of phrases rather than dealing with the substance of it. On the pension tax relief, one of the problems with the way in which our pension system is structured is at present about 80% of all pension tax relief goes to about the top 20% of earners, according to the ESRI from the last major study of pension tax relief. So what that means is the 20% richest pension fund contributors are getting 80% of the benefit. Now, that's not fair. We do have a problem with our pension system. We also have a problem with huge levels of pensioner poverty. So the idea of actually standardising the rates and cutting the thresholds is to try and make it more equitable. And the revenue that the state is no longer losing can be invested in other ways. So actually, the current system is probably the most unfair. And again, the ESRI have looked at studies to see what are the best ways to incentivise people to save for their pensions. And they actually found that, from a study of a range of countries, pension tax reliefs are not a very good way to do it, because many, many high earners would save that money in their pensions even if they didn't get the relief, according to the ESRI.
Let me just give you one example, OK? And I know a lot about pensions because for 12 years I edited Irish Pension Magazine. A person earning 50,000 euros a year, and that is a relatively good but still modest middle-class salary, OK, who is putting 10% into a pension, and there are people who do that, Owen. And that is singularly not enough to provide a decent retirement, but they're putting 10% in. I'm not even talking about employers matching that or contributing. That person, if the 20% tax relief, or sorry, the 41% tax relief goes and all they get is 20%, at the moment is going to lose 1,950 euros worth of tax relief every year. And over a lifetime, over 25 or 30 years, losing that nearly 2,000 a year is going to have a massive impact on the final fund. And from that, the final income that will be drawn down from that fund. I don't think people who prudently and sensibly fund their pensions, and it's increasingly difficult these days to do that, but over many years, lots of people were doing it. It wasn't, you know, it might be the top 20% that's taking the bulk of the money, but there are an awful lot of people earning, you know, those kind of incomes, 30, 40, 50,000, who are putting money away. And for them to lose $2,000 a year in tax relief, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure they would continue to fund it. There's a lot of things that have to be done to get people to fund for pensions. And tax relief is one of those incentives.
And I'm not disputing Jill's figures, but you also need to keep take into account that about 50% of people don't have any pension cover at all. And our rates of pensioner poverty are still way above comparable EU and OECD countries. So when you're looking at these questions, you're not just looking at the one individual case that Jill has talked about. But if you're a responsible government, you're trying to say, OK, what is a better way to spend that lost revenue to the state from the pension tax relief? Do you give 80% of it to the top 20% of pension contributors, or do you reduce it and standardise it in a fairer way and divert some of that saved revenue into lifting other pensioners out of poverty? And that the reality is that's the issue that we're trying to deal with, not just within the pension tax reliefs, but with taxation generally.
Audrey,
Let me make the point, Jill, and then I'll bring you in. For far too long, the debates around whether it's taxation or pension reform, and both are in need of reform. I mean, Jill and I would actually agree on lots of other aspects of the problems of the pension system, is too often we focus on a very narrow group of people and how it would impact on them. What we actually need to start doing is saying, all pensioners, how do we create a pension system and use state revenue and taxes to try and benefit more people rather than the very narrow band that are currently benefiting?
I'll tell you something, if you can crack that nut... I'll vote for Sinn Féin, okay? Well, there's a lot of people out there who are going to be surprised to hear me say that. This is an intractable problem. It is a huge crisis which has been totally and completely ignored, really, by all governments because it is such a massive problem. And, you know, there are so many things that have to be done to try and get people to save more, but this problem is getting bigger, not smaller. And taking away the tax relief, even to those people who can afford to or who have prudently decided to spend their money, you know, in deferring income for their futures, but to discourage them is totally and utterly bonkers.
All I would say is a 20% tax relief is still a generous tax relief. It's not as generous as 40%, but it's still a tax relief. But that in itself isn't the solution
to
the pensions time
bomb. I'm going to read out some texts from our listeners. Jude Hamilton has tweeted, adding all the taxes together, VRT, excise, VAT, PAYE, PRSI, USC, pension tax, we pay well over 80% of all earnings in tax. Den says, Tony says a valuable painting asset doesn't generate income. Well, neither does my boomtime mortgage, but they slapped a tax on that debt, so it should be done. Another text says there's been a huge exodus from France after Hollande increased wealth tax to Great Britain and to London primarily. Why is Owen O'Brien not looking for PAYE workers on $100,000 plus, such as exorbitantly paid public and civil servants to pay 10% USC, like the self-employed have to? Sinn Féin is a public servant protectorate. Do you want to answer that, Owen?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I've yet to see any comprehensive data to prove the argument that there's major capital flight from France. There are some high-profile cases. Gerard Depardieu is obviously one of them. But in fact, what we're seeing across Europe is countries either strengthening their wealth tax legislation or reintroducing wealth taxes, for example, such as Spain, that had abolished them previously. But again, how you deal with capital flight is also in part determined by the design of the wealth tax. All wealth taxes aren't the same. And again, one of the things Sinn Féin has tried to do in our detailed proposals and the legislation we publish alongside them is find ways, learning from best practice internationally, to prevent that. And I have to say, in terms of excess pay in the public sector, I don't think anybody has a better track record on this. Our pre-budget or alternative budgets very clearly call for very, very significant reductions in the very high levels of public sector pay in the civil service, in the political class and elsewhere. And we've done that consistently. In fact, people have rubbished us for arguing that people earning, for example, over 150 grand in the public sector should see reductions of around 30% on that excess and 15% for those over 100 grand. Mm-hmm. We've been very consistent in calling for greater pay equity and reductions starting at the top in the public sector and in the political sector.
OK, I'm conscious that Gerry Murray is in Derry and he's joining us tonight. tonight as well, because we do want to talk about Sinn Féin's record in government in the north as well, and talk about the decisions that they have taken and are due to take. Tony, did you just want to make a point?
Well, I was going to support Owen, but he's already done it himself in terms of that it's pre-budget proposal does call for significant cuts in all public sector salaries it above 100,000.
Absolutely. Gerry, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good evening, Audrey. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Gerry, listening there to Owen talking and outlining Sinn Féin's economic policy for this side of the border, does it tally with their position in the north, or does it fall at the first hurdle given that they don't have tax raising powers in the north to begin with?
I think you've actually summed it up there. The reserved issues in regard to the Stormont administration obviously include taxation, so that any debate on economics in Northern Ireland precludes by and large the issue of taxation, which is actually set at Westminster, where they don't take their seats anyway.
But they have said, and Owen, you can get in on this as well, listening to Sinn Féin, when they're challenged on decisions that they will take in government, they point to their position in the north and they say, we have stopped the introduction of water charges, we have ring-fenced health funding, we have invested in education, we have ensured that the cuts being imposed by the Conservative-led government across the water will not hit the most vulnerable. Now, is that the case?
Well, actually, they did. We do have water charges here in Northern Ireland, Audrey. They didn't stop them. We have water charges for business. We look at the record in government, and I think it is one which is, to put it mildly, not exactly one that they would be proud of. For example, we had a case in December where the Northern Ireland Finance Minister had to take the Agricultural Minister, Sinn Féin's Agriculture Minister, to the High Court on a judicial review for reallocating €137 million. And the Lord Chief Justice found in favour of the Finance Minister and said that her actions were outside the ministerial code. We have the situation in regard to welfare reform, which I think has been deliberately ducked until all of the elections were out of the way. But it is a situation which most people on the ground find absolutely incredible, that the position taken by Sinn Féin means that the Westminster government will levy a fine of between 105 and 200 million on the Northern Ireland Executive over the next 3 years because it cannot come to a decision on welfare reform.
But is that just Sinn Féin, Gerry, or are they the whole parties?
Sinn Féin and the SDLP, but Sinn Féin is the largest bloc party and they're blocking it. But actually it does seem to me to be politically or financially or fiscally irresponsible, especially when one looks at the executive has not even considered how this 100-odd million will be affecting each of the 11 governmental departments. On a matter of the reform of CAP, they have not brought to the executive the proposals that are required from a year ago. So one does get the feeling that when it suits their book, they duck the issue. And that's only in an area which does not, as I say, is not a sovereign government on its own. It's a very small, almost glorified county council. But how would the situation arise when we do then get to a sovereign government and hard decisions have to be taken, especially in a coalition type basis? Because what is very clear is that Owen would accept is that Sinn Féin is not going to form the next government having a majority in the Dáil. So there will be a massive trade-off situation, and the issues which they have raised certainly put them at variance, I would suggest, with mainstream politicians and political parties in the Irish Republic.
OK, so Owen, what do you say to that in relation to the North, first of all, that the reality doesn't match what Sinn Féin says it is doing?
Well, I strongly disagree. And for example, water charges is a good example. What we've said very clearly is we have prevented the introduction of domestic water charges, which is what the government in the south is currently trying to do. Yes, there are commercial water rates, mm-hmm. as there are in the south. They've been in existence for a long time. But the key thing is,
and you have always argued down here that those it's the same thing. No, water charges.
The domestic water charges that the government is currently trying to introduce in the south, we prevented from being introduced in the north. And in fact, the Assembly is subventing the cost of that water to €200 million a year.
But you haven't prevented it. It's only deferred until a couple of years' time.
Today, nobody is paying water charges. And so long as Sinn Féin has any influence in the executive, that will continue to be the case.
But the cost is borne elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the case in any decision that you make. But my point is this. We have taken the same approach, for example, in relation to water north and south. There's no inconsistency there. Likewise, for example, We've been obviously very critical of the government for introducing the property tax in the south. Now, they throw back at us, but there's the regional rate in the north, and that's levied on, in, among other things, the value of house properties. That's true. But we made a very clear commitment before the last Assembly election that there would be no increase in the regional rate set by Stormont over the lifetime of that Assembly. And we've kept to that, whereas the government here is increasing the tax burden on hard-pressed families. So again, there's a consistency. And welfare reform, I have to say, Gerry is completely wrong. That's probably one of the strongest examples of where Sinn Féin is taking exactly the same line, north and south.
No, I didn't say you weren't taking the same line. I said it was an irresponsible line to take.
I'm going to come to that and argue why, in fact, it's a very responsible line to take. The first thing is the government in Westminster have yet to come up with the detailed figures that all of the parties in the executive have required to see the actual impact of the proposed welfare reform. First of all, on some of the most vulnerable families, many of which are dependent on social welfare, but also the domestic economy. The Northern Ireland Council for Voluntary Action, NICVA, have estimated that if the welfare reform package were to go through, the loss to the domestic economy through welfare cuts would be 480 million annually. What the British government is currently threatening to do is essentially to fine the Assembly about £80 million a year. Now, clearly, we don't want that to happen, but it would be much worse to allow a Tory government in London to suck £480 million from the northern economy a year, which would push huge numbers of families, including the working poor, families who are dependent on partial benefits, into greater levels of poverty and wreak havoc with the domestic economy and the retail sector. So the irresponsible thing, in our view, is actually what's been proposed both by the DUP and also by the British government. What we've been trying to do is not to delay this because of elections, because our position on this post-election, Gerry, will be the same as it is before. We've been trying to seriously engage with both the partners in the executive and the British government to try and amend, alter, change and reduce the negative impact. So we're actually the only people who've been very constructive. Meeting after meeting we've had with the DUP and with the British Treasury, we're the ones making proposals to try and address these issues. Everybody else is walking away. And I have to say, if you look at the election results, very clearly, I think people see that what we're doing is actually the sensible thing, which is preventing welfare reform cuts that, if you look at how they're being implemented in Britain, are already starting to unravel. And senior figures in the British Labour Party are actually saying within a year or two, we're probably going to have to reverse many of those things that have been introduced
in
Britain.
Gerry, do you want
because
to
they're having such a negative effect on families and on the domestic economy.
Well, the first thing, Audrey, is that the issue of welfare reform and welfare in general is that it's a reserve matter in Northern Ireland, gets parity with the rest of the UK. And that is accepted by all the parties and what they previously negotiated. It does, however, seem from an economic viewpoint to be absolutely standing on one's head to say that we are going to fight this on a matter of principle, and a fine of between 105 and 200 million therefore is not as relevant as our fight that is ongoing. I did also note that Owen has not made any response to the debacle by the Sinn Féin agriculture minister in relation to 130 million euros of allocated funds that had to go. You can imagine how crazy it would be in a coalition government if the Minister for Finance has to take the Minister of Agriculture to the High Court on a judicial review, and the High Court actually finds in favour of the Minister for Minister for Finance. That indicates that there is something intrinsically wrong with the experiment.
Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, obviously there's a huge difference between the governance arrangements in the north and a standard government. It's coming out of 35 years of conflict. It's coming out of 100 or so years of a segregated and unionist-dominated state. We're obviously trying to find ways of building new relationships, which means the business
That has nothing to do with agricultural policy and regulation to
Europe.
Actually,
that's not the case, right?
It does. Jerry, can you tell me why it does then?
If you stop interrupting me, Gerry, I'd be more than happy to tell you
it does. Continue.
Because at the heart of the Assembly, when you're dealing whether it's with social or economic policy or constitutional or legacy issues, there are very, very big differences between the parties around the executive table. So, for example, whether it's in education or agriculture, one of the big battles around expenditure is Sinn Féin is arguing for changes to the way in which money is spent to make the distribution of those resources much more equitable, like the points I was making at the start of the programme. Whereas within the unionist parties, there's a reliance on much more traditional ways of those expenditures. And that does lead to political battles over how the resources should be allocated. Now, I don't know the detail of the particular instance you're talking about, Gerry, so I don't want to get into that. But what I do know is many of these issues are very difficult. They're difficult, first of all, because we're on opposite ends of the ideological spectrum, ourselves and the DUP. But we're in there in the first instance because it's part of a conflict resolution process, but also because we're trying to build a better future for everybody. And what you know and I know, and having lived in Belfast for 11 years from 95 to 2006, is that it is an immeasurably better place than it was before. Are there difficulties and problems to overcome? Absolutely. And the case of the Michelle O'Neill case is obviously one. But in real terms, not only is Sinn Féin taking the same broadly consistent approach north and south, but we're actually having some very positive impacts. And if you look at education, for example, very interesting article in the Irish Times in January of this year looking at the dramatic increase in levels of literacy and numeracy among young children as a direct result of the expenditure decisions of the Assembly, including John O'Dowd, the Sinn Féin Education Minister, to target money more effectively at the most disadvantaged communities. We now have in the North the highest levels of literacy and numeracy among 8, 9 and 10-year-olds of all English-speaking regions of the world. That's a direct result of the good decisions that Sinn Féin and others in the Assembly have made.
I'm just kind of curious, though. I mean, is the same situation in the North happening here with Sinn Féin? You know, are they calling for higher income tax amongst people who earn higher earnings? I mean, are they talking about, you know, adjusting or imposing wealth taxes? Are you talking about higher CGT and cap?
But do you have a policy
tax
on that, Owen, because you don't have
is
the power
that
to
happening?
No, the issue is this, is that when we produce, for example, our budgetary documents in the North, they're focused on the powers that the Assembly has. Like when we produce documents in relation to local authorities, they're based on the powers that they have. So the difficulty, of course, is those are reserved matters for Westminster. What we do strongly call for...
But are you calling for Westminster
No, we're calling for those powers...
Those
we're
sort of taxes for, those, for Northern Ireland. And
we're calling for those powers to be transferred to the Assembly so those decisions
so
can be made here. Exactly.
Are you calling for them to be transferred to the Assembly so that the taxes could be increased in Northern Ireland, Owen?
The same types of tax reform packages that we have in
the
South.
No.
I'm going to answer the question. Exactly the same kind of tax reform packages we have in the South, we would like to see in the North if and when tax raising and varying powers are transferred, of course.
Because that sort of thing would certainly, I think it would be very controversial there, probably even more so because, you know, the situation in the in the UK is very different in terms of the amount of tax that people pay and at what level they pay it, and even on things like capital gains tax. You know, I mean, here we have an allowance, an annual allowance. If you sell something, if you try and make a gain from the sale of whatever, you have a capital allowance of €1,270. That hasn't changed in over a decade. In the UK, of course, it's €13,410. So, that I mean, there's great gaps between the fact that the tax situation is more beneficial in the North than it is here for people who are earning money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worthwhile looking at the total impact of the figures, and they're not as dramatic as they might appear looking at individual things. That the Sinn Féin economic proposals suggest the abolition of the property tax and reducing US universal social charge for lower incomes, and that's costing about $600 million. But the two main headline taxes are the 48%, which is about 365, and the wealth tax, which we'll argue is, say, is 700 million or so. So that's an extra billion, but 600 million gone in the headline stuff. So the net effect is a relatively small net addition in terms of tax. And even when we take the other taxes, well, the government's broadly introduced the other taxes and so on. So we're not looking at a substantial amount of additional tax per year to meet what would appear to be the desirable points that Owen said at the beginning in terms of a more equal society and so on. So the worry would be that when you look at the figures, if Sinn Féin implemented these budgets, they wouldn't have lots of extra money to do much in terms of the agenda, and therefore the tax rates would correspondingly start rising to meet the objectives on expenditure.
OK, well, for the next couple of minutes, our regular contributor, the author and comedian Colm O'Regan, has been thinking about Sinn Féin's electoral performance and imagining what if.
Sinn Féin on the rise and possibly forming the next government? If nothing else, it's interesting. People love Sinn Féin or hate them, but at least they feel something for them. And they're obviously good at the politics. When you think about it, How many political parties do you know could be in government in one jurisdiction, be in opposition next door during a recession, and raise or hold their vote in both areas simultaneously, despite having voters in different areas who want different things? So it's reasonable to assume that the next general election is going to be a biggie. Someone is going to have to make a really big decision about who to go into government with. If I could be permitted about 90 seconds of what-ifery, here's a bit of what-ifery. Let's say the government lasts until 2016. The economy has picked up a little bit. Labour are still punished. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael go into coalition to avoid Sinn Féin. It'll look weird. For a start, the colours will clash, but actually nothing will change. But let's suppose, for argument's sake, that the next budget is the final straw for Labour. And Joan Burton figures the only way for Labour to survive is to go now while there's still some bit of ideology left. A snap election is called in 2015. There's 158 seats needed to be filled, 79 for a majority. Let's say Fine Gael go back to 50-something, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin go to 30-something, Labour 20-something, and a few independents, some of whom are fairly lefty, and they're all very annoyed. There are lots of outcomes. The least interesting is Fine Gael and Labour again, and they hope they'll stick at it until things get better. But with poor opinion polls and Labour panicking more about complete annihilation, it would be a fractious administration. Enda Kenny might go off to Europe to relax and make a bit of money for himself. Labour would pull out again, there'd be another election, and then Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil would go together. But by then, the country might be out of the crisis, so we'd have a fairly average centrist government and our chance would be gone. But what if Labour left in October, they renounced the centre, had a pre-election pact with Sinn Féin, roped in a few of the smarter independents, and just what if, for once, we had a lefty government? For the first time ever. And maybe they weren't spendy, loony lefty, but just a bit lefty and a bit compassionate, and put in some safeguards for the most vulnerable, and stopped fawning over the establishment, and started looking out for the lower middle class and below. Wouldn't it be interesting, at least just once, to try a bit of left? And if, on the other hand, we just got a government that were as detached as all the others, as interested in themselves and as cynical, then at least as an electorate we could say we tried. At least for a while, it was interesting.
Colm O'Regan there. What about that, Jill? I mean, as Owen said at the outset, if we've been following the same kind of economics for years mm-hmm. and we've seen the catastrophe that we've been through over the last number of years, why not try something different?
I'm flabbergasted at the suggestion that somehow we don't raise enough taxation or that we don't spend enough on social issues. You know, the social welfare bill in this country has exceeded 21 billion euros again. And we're only bringing in, what, 32 billion in tax. We're still borrowing 10 billion a year. We have 204 billion in debt. There's 166 billion euros in household debt. And somebody's solution is that we should raise more taxes and we should distribute more of it to, you know, to people who are just not earning enough according to those political people. I mean, I just think it's absolutely crazy. We are collecting too much tax in this country. People need the money that they earn to be able to spend on their families and to, you know, spend in the economy and create jobs. We squander and waste billions and billions apart, and Owen and I are in complete agreement over things like paying off bankers and bondholders. This country, I think, is an economic basket case. And I don't think taxing people and targeting people who earn 100,000 or who have wealth of a million, in the greater sum of things, this is not a lot of money in the world that we live in at the moment, especially when it's already being hit with, you know, 52% marginal tax rates. And as one of your contributors said, taxes, when you add all the other tax, mm-hmm. probably 80% of everything you earn is already going to governments.
Okay, Owen.
So,
well, first of all, nobody pays an effective tax rate of 80%. And there's lots of data to show that that's not the case. But
when everything is added up?
Absolutely. Nobody does. And there's very good data showing what the actual effective tax rate that people pay. But here's my point. At the start, I argued that this wasn't just about tax and spend. And it's one point where I agree with Jill. That's not the solution on its own, which is why I was saying at the start, the key things are about, first of all, investing in job creation, because the best way to reduce the social welfare bill of 21 billion is to get those huge numbers of people off job seekers allowance, get them back to work and get them paying taxes. And the best way to do that in the context of a recession where the private sector won't invest is to have economic stimulus, sensible, well-delivered economic stimulus. And that's why Sinn Féin has argued consistently, not with extra tax revenue, but with money from the National Pension Reserve Fund, matching funding from the European Investment Bank, which are low-interest loans.
Jeez, that train left the station a long time
ago. No.
The National Pension Reserve Fund?
Go today.
Just give it a rest.
Go today to the National Treasury Management Fund and look at what's in the NPRF, and it's still about 6 billion euros. There is money available from the European Investment Bank to invest. We're consistently borrowing less from the European Investment Bank than all of the Eurozone crisis countries.
We're paying 9 billion a year in interest.
We are, and the best way to tackle that is to deal with the other pillar I mentioned at the start, which is to start tackling the bank debt.
Tony.
So this isn't a debate just about tax. Okay. It's also about investment in jobs and reducing the bank debt. Yeah.
There's not a huge difference between what our governments have been doing over the long term and what a socialist government would do. And there's not going to be much difference between what Sinn Féin will do and what the current governments are doing. For example, Sinn Féin is committed to the elimination of the deficit. Maybe not as quick as the current government, but then they're going to be constrained by the agreements we have with Brussels and so on. So they're still going to try and reduce the deficit. And as I said, when you look at the total figures, you're looking at some hundreds of millions of extra taxes, which is not going to fundamentally transform expenditure.
It's about a billion euros of extra tax.
Yeah, but they're going to reduce the property tax, so people will have
allegedly
the property tax that they would have. So even on the investment programme, and he talks about the failure of the private sector, included in the Sinn Féin proposals of the 13 billion is actually 3 billion, which would come in an incentivised way from the private pension sector. So it's 3 billion from that, 1.5 billion from the European Investment Bank and the National Pension Reserve Fund. But the government has already done that with its Strategic Investment Fund. The problem is finding projects which are sensible and will generate a return. I'm always amazed at the argument that there's money in the European Investment Bank, but that's loans. You have to pay it back. And unless it's put into projects that generate returns, you don't generate any revenue to pay it back. So I haven't seen, and I know the Nevin Economic Research Institute has also argued for an economic stimulus and talked about putting it into commercially sustainable projects. But sure, if you could come up with commercially sustainable or revenue generating projects, you wouldn't stop at 13 billion. You should put 113 billion in and generate the return. The problem is what you'd put the money into.
Two things. I mean, first of all, the government hasn't even got the Strategic Investment Bank up and running 3 years into office. It was meant to be a major plank of Labour's 2011 election manifesto. They were going to invest 1 billion through the investment bank, and it hasn't materialised yet. Now, they're talking about it and they're promising it, and it'll have an investment fund of about 500 million. So I suppose there is a big difference in terms of the scale and the time frame for implementation that Sinn Féin has argued. The other thing about the European Investment Bank is their loans. There's no doubt about that at all. Not only are they low interest loans, but one of the good things about the European Investment Bank, and this goes back to a point Jill makes about our bad track record of government management of major projects. The European Investment Bank doesn't just lend the money. It also plays an active role in terms of the overseeing and implementation of the projects and has a very, very good track record of success. Now, we're going to pay this year an estimated 4 million back to the European Investment Bank in interest on our current loans. It's 4 million, obviously, that we have to pay back. But when you see the return you would get from significant increases in EIB investment in terms of job creation, and there are lots of projects. And again, the 60-page Sinn Féin document goes through a range of them, both in terms of helping small businesses, major infrastructure projects, things which are about improving our social infrastructure and our business infrastructure. So there are lots of good projects there.
Okay.
There are lots of good ways of implementing them.
Jill, you have a lot more faith than I do in government actually being able to operate those sort of schemes and do them efficiently and actually get a decent return. I probably get a little more worked up about this, and I really shouldn't, because I have a feeling that if Sinn Féin gets into government, into a coalition, or even if it gets a majority, reality sets in pretty quickly. And these sort of massive reforms of tax systems, I've been listening for 30 years to the need for all of this, and it seldom happens. Mm. And I think that, you know, more sensible heads will prevail eventually. And also, you don't stay in office if you piss off the middle classes in the end of the day. And that's what a lot of this is about.
And that ties in with a question from Tommy in Wicklow to you, Owen. He wants to know if the removal of the USC, the changes to the USC and the property tax, will that be a red line that you wouldn't cross if a coalition government was on the cards?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things we're going to do in advance of the next general election, because I think the average voter out there is right to be sceptical of any political party, including Sinn Féin making promises, is outline very, very clearly from an early stage in that election campaign exactly what those red line issues are. And just to come back to Jill, our proposals aren't about pissing off the middle class. In fact, one of the reasons why the government has had such a bad election is because their policies aren't just hitting people who would have traditionally voted for Sinn Féin, people who are working class and long-term unemployed. It is hitting the middle, and particularly that large bulk of people, the lower middle class. 1 in 7 working families now living at risk of poverty because of government policies. The type of people, the percentage of people who earn individually over 100,000 euros a year or have net assets of in excess of a million are a very, very small section of Irish society. And the problem is the heaviest burden of the adjustments that have been pursued, particularly by Fine Gael and Labour, are falling right on the middle and the lower middle. And if you look at the detail of Sinn Féin budget proposals, some of that would be
easier
what we're suggesting.
The only middle class contribution is the pension tax, the property tax.
Look, we will return to this no doubt in weeks and months to come. Thank you all very much indeed. Owen O'Brien, Tony Foley, Jill Kirby and Gerry Murray. Back on Tuesday at 10. Till then, good night.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carville, was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney, the researcher was Richie Byrne, and on sound tonight was Padraig Carney.